Dave Svanopterp here with Jonathan Harding. Schalke have a new head coach, well, an old head coach, after firing Domenico Tedesco last week. We're also going to get into this scorching hot title race we have on our hands after Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund enter another match day tied on points. And we're also going to have a fun discussion about the German national team, and we're going to pick the best 11 we think that Germany can field right now. But with Tedesco's firing, let's start first in Gelsenkirchen. So a really strange week last week, Jonathan, for Schalke and Schalke fans and everybody that has anything to do with Schalke, because they lose 7-0 to Manchester City, which was funny because that happened on the day that we recorded the podcast, where we said we thought that Domenico Tedesco was going to get a few more games. Mm. But after that result, Domenico Tedesco led training on Thursday. He was there for training. And then at 7 o'clock on Thursday evening, Schalke decide to announce that he's no longer their coach. Mm. And then Huub Stevens takes over. Huub Stevens, of course, was a coach at Schalke for a very long time, was a member of their board he still is. He's stepping into doing the head coaching role. And then they lose to Leipzig 1-0 at home, and they're currently in 14th place. Augsburg have moved ahead of them, so only Stuttgart, Hanover, and Nuremberg are below them. I want to first talk about the way that this Thursday, because it does seem strange to me that why would you have your coach lead training if not to fire him afterwards?
Yeah, it is a bit odd, although maybe it's just a Schalke thing, you know? I mean, we're used to Schalke being a little bit strange in the way that they do things, but I don't know. There's maybe a consideration that they were waiting on Huub Stevens' confirmation at the time, and they just needed to be sure, or maybe it was an opportunity for Tedesco to say goodbye to his players. Maybe that's the professional way of doing it, you know, one final session. Lads, I just want to say thanks very much for everything you've done for me. There's so many ways to spin it. But it certainly, I don't know whether it looks as odd as it could have done. It could have looked a bit worse, I think. But everybody in that situation was probably still reeling from losing 7-0. I mean, that's the height of embarrassment. Manchester City are an excellent side, but no team who considers themselves a Champions League team should be playing that kind of, or delivering that kind of performance. So,
yeah, that's what Jochen Schneider said after the game. You're allowed to lose to Manchester City because they're best team in the Premier League. Yeah, but sure. Yeah, it's the way that you lose, yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. And I think that's the reason that Tedesco's gone. That was the moment where I thought, personally, just for me, that there's no way he can continue now as head coach. And I've been, as I'm sure you know, if you've listened to the pod recently, you know, Matt and I have been very pro him and giving him an opportunity, or believing that he deserves another opportunity to stick around, have a full window. But when you watch the manner of defeat, it's hard to say that there's a future there for him. And so ultimately, I'm not surprised that the decision came when it did. But the concern for Schalke, as you say, is the relegation battle and the fact that the performance against Leipzig wasn't that encouraging. There were some positive moments, but I think the basic issue here is that the team isn't just not good enough.
I think I want to give Huub Stevens a break. I think it would be harsh to try to expect them to even get a point against Leipzig, considering the defense that they are. They're the best. They have conceded the least amount of goals.
13 in the Bundesliga. Clean sheets for Peter Gulacsi. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's would be difficult to say we expect results from Huub Stevens right away.
No, I'm not suggesting that they should have got a result, but I would have liked to have seen an improved performance, because I think mentally the change of a manager and going back to basics and doing things very simply the way that Stevens does, I would have maybe expected some minor improvement. And I guess you could argue it was there at times, but you know, it's always difficult when a manager comes in and 2 days later you've got a game and you expect the side to perform miracles. I'm not trying to suggest that Schalke should have done a lot better, but I think I was expecting there to be more of a change after Tedesco's departure, because I think it was such an emotional moment of change for the club, and I just didn't see that on the pitch. So that makes me slightly concerned that whoever the manager is, the issue really is the quality or the lack of quality of the players.
Well, there was also this report that came out in Sportbild last week where it showed the players who backed Dominika Tedesco and those who didn't. Among those who didn't were Mark Uth, who did not make the trip to Manchester to play in that game. Also, Ralf Fährmann, the captain of the team. And a lot of the players who were with him, one of them was Daniel Caligiuri, one of them was Weston McKennie, but a lot of them were the ones who ended up playing under Tedesco at the time. So that kind of was that was kind of expected. What I'm curious now is if that fracture in the locker room is still there even after Tedesco.
I think if there are teammates who differ in their opinions as to which manager that they previously backed, then I don't think that goes away overnight.
You know, right.
I don't think Mark Uth's going to forget that Weston McKennie was pro him. But I think it's important to remember that they're all professionals and they all know that they need to play well collectively to do better. And Schalke are in a relegation battle, let's make no bones about it. So they have to play well as individuals and collectively. So I think for me, the issue is whether this side can put those issues behind them. Because, you know, if I'm Mark Uth and I'm thinking, well, I wasn't pro Tedesco, I don't understand why other people were, I'd like to think that in those situations, Uth, Fährmann, players who were not happy with Tedesco, would have the foresight and the maturity to say, I can understand why Daniel Caligiuri and Weston McKennie were pro him, because they were playing. And ultimately, players like McKennie or Katuchu have taken on the next stage of their development because of the decisions that Tedesco has made. I know some of that comes from the youth academy as well, but ultimately, McKennie is a perfect example of someone who's blossomed as a result of the way that Tedesco has sort of nurtured him. So I think there's going to be division in the Schalke changing rooms because of a lot of reasons, not just because of who was, you know, pro and against Dominika Tedesco as a head coach. The question now is, how does Huub Stevens make that fracture as minimal as possible, or even remove it with, you know, 8 games to go? Because that's really the challenge. Because this is already a forgotten season, and Schalke need to make sure it's not a historically diabolical one.
Yeah, well, I think most people who have been following the Bundesliga for a rather long time know that Huub Stevens, near the end of his coaching career, was what they called a firefighter manager, yeah, who came in and saved his team from relegation. He did that with Stuttgart.
I was there for that one against Paderborn, yeah. He's got a reputation for it.
Yeah, so he seems to be the perfect person to come in right now, considering also that if you look at the rest of their schedule, they play all the teams that are in the bottom five. They play Augsburg, they play Stuttgart, they play Nuremberg, they play Hannover. So their next game is actually against Hannover after the international break.
I mean, that's such an enormous game. That's such an enormous game. And yeah, I do think Stevens makes sense, but it also feels a very emotional knee-jerk reaction from Schalke. I mean, let's give it to Huub Stevens and Mike Buskins so that maybe they can sort of save us till the end of the season. I know they're going to have a reset and a rebuild in the summer, but, you know, how many times have we said that Schalke are going to have a reset in the summer? You know, so I don't know. It's a difficult situation. I'm sure that Stevens will do enough to keep them up, because I think the other three sides below them are terrible.
They are really, really bad.
The only issue will be if Stuttgart pick up form in the latter stages, because I think Stuttgart have got enough individual quality to maybe turn a few games. The question is whether they can do it collectively.
But even so, do you think like a Schalke is a type of side that would, I mean, they go down, we'll definitely have this discussion again when it comes around, but the relegation promotion playoff or the interleague playoff, if Schalke play in that game, you wouldn't doubt them to go down, would you?
No, I think if they play in that game, they win.
Yeah.
Because I think that game shouldn't exist and it should be 3-up, 3-down.
Right,
but
exactly.
That's a whole other pod, and we did do
exactly
one on those, one of those a while back, but yeah, I mean, I back them to win, but it would also be a pretty disgraceful situation for the club if they found themselves in a relegation playoff. Looking at the fact, I think Nuremberg and Hannover are so far away from the expected or necessary quality of the Bundesliga that's not even up for debate. I think the issue now is the playoff spot, and I think it will come down to whether Stuttgart or Schalke get the best out of their individual quality that they can in the final few games. I can't remember when Schalke played Stuttgart, but that game could well prove decisive. Is it straight after the Hanover game?
No, it's at the end of the season.
Wow, okay. So, I mean...
That could define who goes into the relegation playoff.
Could be enormous. I mean, I'm tempted to say with eight games, there's still a lot of points to be won and maybe Schalke can haul themselves out of there, but... I mean, Tedesco. Stevens has certainly got enough about him to get points in other areas going into the final stretch. So maybe it won't come down to the final day, but...
Yeah, they also, I mean, it's worth mentioning. I mean, there's no chance they're going to have any chance in the Revier Derby when they go to Dortmund.
I don't know. It's a difficult game. It's a different kind of game. I think form goes out of the window. And yeah, one look at Borussia Dortmund so far in the second half of this season, I wouldn't bet against Schalke getting a draw in that game.
Okay, but yeah, I mean, they also have Hoffenheim at home. That's a game that they could get at least a point.
Yeah, the way Hoffenheim love a draw, so yes.
Yeah, so they also had Frankfurt at home who they're in the quarterfinals of the Europa League now.
Who knows, yeah.
And I think that match also comes in between their quarterfinal against Benfica. So you saw that, I mean, Frankfurt's performance over the weekend was one of a tired team, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, they still had 18 shots, I think, but I mean, they were playing Nürnberg, so you can kind of pencil in
18 shots by a team.
You definitely can.
Against Nürnberg. Yeah. I think the way that the Bundesliga has been in the recent seasons, there's always teams that are worse than these established Bundesliga teams. It's very rare that a team like Schalke would go down. I mean, Cologne going down was somewhat of a big deal last year, but that they had not spent that much time in the Bundesliga after being promoted, so it wasn't that such exciting.
But Matt did say, and Matt was right to point this out, I think the problem with a lot of clubs in Germany is if they qualify for Europe, there seems to be this unnecessary ambition to suddenly want to achieve everything all the time. But now we're in Europe, so now we're a top 10 team. You know, you've got to take things slower than that, because Cologne were not ready for that European campaign. Their fans were, absolutely, but the quality on the pitch was a problem. And then you got rid of the goal scorer who basically was your lifeblood in front of goal. And that those two things combined puts you in that situation. Schalke have done, I think, the same thing. They've got back into the Champions League, finished second in the league and thought, okay, now we're a top four team. And actually, they went and bought players that
were not top four signings.
Exactly. And that were players that were suited to a relegation playoff. So maybe they'll come good.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there's maybe a bigger overarching issue that a lot of Bundesliga teams get ahead of themselves much faster than they should. And there should be slower steps towards development.
Well, you said earlier that if Schalke make it to the Interleague playoff, that it would look really bad for the club. But they've already sacked their manager of sport. They've already sacked their coach. I mean, who else is going to be damaged by this?
Players are already pretty damaged by it, but I think they will receive the greatest amount of abuse if they don't avoid the playoff. Because if you remember, the banners were a nice gesture towards Tedesco at the last game against Leipzig at home, you know, thanking him, but saying ultimately, you know, we don't want any mercenaries.
Yeah, that fan said that, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's so interesting because it's ultimately pointing towards, you know, players in the team that they feel don't have the fight or aren't showing the kind of effort that they think is appropriate for Schalke. Now, on the other hand, you can say, well, these are paid athletes who are, you know, ultimately giving their best for the club, and I think it's maybe, you could argue that it's a bit harsh, you know, it's not like they're going out there to lose. Some of them are just limited. They're just not very good. Or certainly not good enough. On the other hand, the Schalke fans know what it is to play for this club more than some of those players who have arrived this season or just the season before. So they have a better understanding of what it means to, you know, fight for having that badge on your chest and being from that area. So I think they're well within their rights to say, what are you doing? Especially when you look at the performances. So the real question is, who are those players? Because I think over the next few weeks, it will be easy to spot the players that are really pushing for it, working hard, matching those values, and those who are coasting, maybe. I mean, the fact that Nabil Bentaleb was put into the second team for disciplinary reasons is a surprise in some respects. I'm sure that Tottenham fans will say that it's not a surprise. But, you know, there's a player who I think was really a key part of the way that Tedesco was playing and had put in some great performances. but obviously has other issues that have stopped him from getting the best out of his football. And it's a shame because he could be a really leading player going into this final stretch, but now it's up to others. Can Mark Oot be that player? Has Ralf Fährmann still got enough in him to put aside his issues and to get the best out of his performance, or help Alexander Nübel be better in goal? You know, can the Schalke team collectively lift their performance? That's the issue.
Let's return back to the top of the table, because that's a little bit more exciting.
Let's.
Hertha Berlin and Borussia Dortmund played an excellent game on Saturday night, and it was really good.
It's dramatic.
It was really dramatic. Yeah. I don't know if people follow my tweets, but I was really frustrated with Christian Pulisic in that game. When I think I
you weren't the only one.
Yeah. So, but it was the first win by Borussia Dortmund in the league in 6 seasons. That means a lot, doesn't it?
I mean, to win in Berlin, you mean?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, to win in the capital, a place that Pal Dardai has made pretty difficult over the last few years, is huge. But I think less about that and more about the timing of the win, in all senses of the word timing. I mean, Marco Reus scoring a winner from a Jadon Sancho cross in the 93rd minute is huge. But also in the timing of the fact that Bayern were playing on Sunday and Dortmund made sure that they didn't open the door for Bayern. You know, they made sure that, you know, you've got to keep kicking it through week after week, and we're not going to just sit back and let you take this title. And I think that was such a huge performance because, and I did write about this afterwards, but the real difficulty with this Borussia Dortmund side is that they are capable of playing two ways, and they are so far apart from each other. Mm. The way they played in the first half was so abjectly disappointing. And yet, perhaps, what you can expect from a side that is very young and still learning in a number of positions, and yet in the second half, those feelings of, well, you know, they're still learning and developing, feel like they should just be thrown away because they're so good when they want to be. You know, right. And Jadon Sancho was unbelievable.
He struggled in recent weeks, I think. But
he still possesses that ability to do something magical.
Yes.
And that cross, you know, in that moment, at that time, and to get into that position, as you pointed out, you know, Christian Pulisic had been trying all day to do that, and Jadon Sancho was there and did it in 5 seconds.
I would argue that he actually didn't try as many times as he should have.
But, you know, there's a lot to be said when you dissect that performance. So Christian Pulisic, a player who has not really featured this season,
right,
has his move to Chelsea confirmed, bit of a weird situation to be playing out at the end of your spell because he's now a Chelsea player, back on loan at Dortmund. It's sort of weird. And it can't have been easy for him because nobody expected Jadon Sancho to blow everyone out of the water in terms of selection. He's been amazing. And it's quite hard for him to get into this team because I don't think he's really featured. Because I don't think Favre has seen him as an option. This was an opportunity for him to remind everyone that he was still the golden boy of American soccer, and he didn't do it. Yeah. And he missed a lot of easy chances, and, you know, he didn't necessarily put himself into the game in a way that I think Sancho did.
Yeah, true.
And that makes such a difference. And then, of course, Royce. I mean, that finish is so hard. Yeah. It's so hard because the touch, the ability to turn your foot in that direction and to time the contact perfectly so that it's sort of spinning away from the keeper at that time is of the game is so, so difficult. And huge credit to Hertha Berlin for making life difficult for Dortmund, but more Dortmund inviting Hertha, you know. A couple of situations where they were just avoidable mistakes.
Yeah, I think the Berkey one was...
It's tough on Berkey.
It's really tough to say parry it away.
Yeah, but ultimately that he should be. He should be parrying out for a corner, or he should be pushing it away, not pushing it back into play. And he knows that. He doesn't need us to sit here and tell him that. But it's unfortunate because he's been so good for them this season. You know, and it's hard to see someone like that make an individual error.
Yeah, I think a few weeks ago I looked it up as his highest save percentage this season.
He's been monstrous. I mean, I think it's Lars Pullman who's got a great counter of Roman Berkey mega saves or something. You know, it keeps ticking over. It's true, though. He's made some unbelievable stops this season, and I think that's worth remembering.
That reminds me of back when 24 was a show. There was Jack Bauer, I think jackbauercount.com, which I'll count all of his kills.
Maybe we need a Roman Berkey saves website. Yeah. Right. It's such an interesting team, you know, in so many positions. And you look recently, he's not picked Hakimi. He's picked Marius Wolf.
That's true.
But it's an interesting choice because Marius Wolf is really an attacking player, which is really what Hakimi is as well. But Marius Wolf has got the greater discipline to play wing back. Mm. So it's really interesting to see the way that Favre's trying to get the best out of this team by moving things around. you know, big discussion about the handball against Julian Weigl. Yeah. I think it's totally understandable what Favre said afterwards. You know, the people who make this rule have never played football and they don't really understand. And I agree, because I think in that situation, Julian Weigl is just trying to protect his face.
I think so too.
And I think it's a reflex.
I saw it as a flex, yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, there just needs to be a little bit more wiggle room on the decision to say, okay, guys, look, he's raised his hands. Yes, we understand that that's not part of the law, but...
Why don't I kick a ball as hard as I can at your face and see what you do with
your hands? Are you just going to stand there and be like, I'm not going to pull my hands up because it might give away a penalty. You know, no one's going to do that. And I'm going to protect my face. Yeah, so that's what people do. So I can understand that being a tough decision. But Dortmund, again, they have the ability to show strength in adversity. They can perform, but it's not a sustainable way to play football. I mean, if you're going into this run-in, you know, when you're playing football like this, it's a very high possibility of one of these games just not going your way. Right. You know, a bit of luck doesn't go right. Let's not forget that Marco Grujic hits the post before the winner for Hertha, before the winner by Royce, and Hertha have the chance to score another goal. In another game, that goes in and you lose 3-2.
Yeah.
And it changes the complexion of everything.
Yeah, and Hertha, as good as they have been against Borussia Dortmund in recent seasons at home, they actually have not been great at home recently either. So it was a little disappointing to see that they needed a stoppage time winner. But again, this is how you can win titles. I mean, you're not playing your best. Like
Absolutely.
You said, when you don't play your best half, and then you play your best half when it counts, that's how you can win trophies.
And that's all that matters, ultimately. You know, and the pressure or the biggest question is, can this Borussia Dortmund team keep winning games? Because that is what they have to do. And I think afterwards, Thomas Delaney said, you know, my legs are gone, my voice is gone, but we know how important this win is for us mentally. They have to win every single game because they cannot afford to give Bayern Munich an inch.
Yeah, because Bayern Munich is taking every single inch that they have afforded to them.
Yeah.
They won again 6-0 over the weekend against Mainz. You're rolling your eyes.
Yeah,
I'm rolling my eyes for a different reason. It's because that's what their performance in the Champions League should have been, I think. I mean, they were playing at home again in one of the most important games of their season. And they were timid and they were... And they really didn't show up to play until Liverpool scored that goal. And then all of a sudden you play Mainz and you feel like scoring six again.
Yeah, I can totally understand that criticism. But that's always the beauty of hindsight, isn't it? But we talked about it before the game. Matt Ford wrote a nice piece about it. You know, how does Kovac play it? If he plays it conservatively and you go out, there'll be criticism. If you play it aggressively and go out, people might say, oh, well, you should have played a more tactical game and maybe it would have worked. But maybe more people would have been pro your decision because you had the balls to go for it. Very difficult decision, but can we be surprised that a coach like Niko Kovac, who has never been in this situation before, will revert to something that he is comfortable with? You know, what does he know best? That football in a pressure situation is what he's going to revert to. Maybe he should have trusted his players more, or, you know, given himself the opportunity to go for it and say, we're at home, we're Bayern Munich, we don't need to be afraid. I totally agree. He should have done that. But it's so much easier to say that afterwards. And I think when you look at Kovac in that situation, he thought that was the most effective way to play the game. Make them force the issue. And can we really blame Niko Kovac for the fact that Manuel Neuer makes a huge individual error and you go and you go in at the break in a situation where you're thinking, right? But it was 1-1 at halftime, right? Because Joel Matip scores an own goal. And really you're thinking, we're in a great position here.
We score one more goal
and we're through. And Liverpool know that they don't have to force the issue. So Liverpool are going to sit back. Okay, that's difficult because you've got to break through. But that means 15, 20 minutes after halftime, that's where I think they should have really gone for it. Because they know Liverpool have no other option but to sit back because Liverpool are through at that point.
Right.
So not taking the ball by its horns at half in the 20-minute period after halftime, I think was a mistake that ultimately cost them the game. Looking at the Mainz performance, my issue is really more with the fact that, you know, players like Robert Lewandowski score 3 minutes into that game but can't score against key players or key opposition in the Champions League. You're looking at individual performances in the Mainz game where you're thinking, wow, you know.
James Rodriguez, he was so bad in that Champions League game. And then all of a sudden scores a hat-trick.
Yeah, and he was absolutely fantastic against Mainz. But maybe it tells you that Bayern... or Kovac's system is perfect for winning domestic trophies. But it isn't necessarily the level that Bayern Munich need to challenge on a European scale, because on a European stage. I do have concerns about how far Niko Kovac can take this team in Europe. but I'm pretty confident he can win them some trophies in Germany.
To be honest, I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned Niko Kovac first, because I think it actually has these two contrasting performances this week from Bayern Munich has more to do with the players, I think, than it actually has to do with Niko Kovac. I mean, you saw Frank Ribery run his freaking butt off the entire Liverpool game. He came off in the 60th minute, but he was running the entire time before that. He was running an hour straight. But he was the only person that was like that. You know, you saw Thiago have to push James Rodriguez out of the way because James Rodriguez was in his way. He was trying to get in the right position to build up the play, and James Rodriguez was literally in his way. So not only was he trying to get away from Liverpool players, he was trying to get away from James Rodriguez. And then you see James Rodriguez all of a sudden decides he wants to play and scores a hat trick and looks great. And now I think he thinks he can make the case now. I should be starting every single game. I shouldn't have come off in the whatever minute I came off in the Champions League. And it's like, no, that's not how it works.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, in that game, Liverpool, it was such a cagey game. I think Liverpool benefited from having Henderson come off and Fabinho coming on. I think he made a big difference for them. But yeah, you're right to put some of it on the players. You know, Lewandowski not necessarily performing in both legs. You'd look to him to be your
striker.
Haven't
scored in seven knockout games
now.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a long run for a player that is trying to be the best number nine in the world.
He's considered one of the best number nine in the world by many people.
By many people, and yet he doesn't. He's now got an unfortunate record or an unwanted record of not scoring in the games where you really need your best players to deliver. I thought Frank Ribery did run his butt off, but actually wasn't very effective. And it was interesting because he came on in the week beforehand on the weekend and had three assists in half an hour.
Right.
And I thought, here's a brilliant momentum changer sort of to take into the game, because Kingsley Coman is just obviously at another level now. And we saw that against Mainz because he was also fantastic. That goal was unbelievable.
Yeah, so good.
Really, really good. But that's the kind of performance that, or delivery or whatever it is that you want to call it. You needed that against Liverpool. And so maybe there was a certain element of, you know, maybe Bayern could have benefited from Thomas Müller being in that game. I don't know. Maybe they could have benefited from some other performers, because, there was an interesting statistic going around. I can't remember who posted it, but Lewandowski is something like 100 or 90% better when Thomas Müller plays with him. And maybe there's something to be said about the combination of those two. We saw that against Gladbach in the weeks before.
Lewandowski, by the way, in the past has said, Thomas Müller takes so much attention away from me. I love playing with him. I remember him saying that in the Pep Guardiola days.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about that. But ultimately, yes, you're right to say, why is it that Bayern Munich can turn up and, you know, hit Mainz for six? And Wolfsburg, for that matter, the week before. And yet in the game in between, the season-defining game, the Niko Kovac future-defining game, perhaps, they didn't deliver. What's more concerning, to sort of bring it back to the Bundesliga, is that in these games that Borussia Dortmund are just about winning, with last-minute winners or, you know, epic cup final battles at home against Stuttgart in the rain the week before, Borussia Dortmund are really struggling. Bayern Munich are waltzing, you know, like this is a friendly match and you've invited the other team and basically they're just happy to be there and get some signed kit afterwards. You know, like, that's what it feels
getting some
like.
Some squad players like Alphonso Davies, some confidence
by
getting on the
board. Alphonso Davies is loving life. He gets to come on and score the simplest of goals and, you know, make Canada feel like they're going to win the World Cup in 10 years. I mean, honestly, it feels very familiar to see Bayern sort of steamrolling teams. But what's concerning for the title race is that Bayern Munich are just extending their goal difference. I mean, what is it now? It's a 7-goal difference, right? Because of that game. And if you look at the fact they've scored 12 unanswered goals in the last two Bundesliga games, take the 12 off, right? And Borussia Dortmund are in great shape.
So, well, the other thing too is going into this stretch where they've been tied at the top of the table, Borussia Dortmund had a 2-goal advantage in goal difference just 2 weeks ago. And now it's a 7-goal disadvantage.
That's what happens when you narrowly win games, if you're Borussia Dortmund, and you're just happy about the points. And Bayern Munich, on the other hand, win games whilst sipping tea in midfield with 20 minutes to go.
To be fair, I mean, we talked about this stretch in the fall. They played Wolfsburg, they've played Mainz, and they're going to play Freiburg next week. Those are, Wolfsburg at the time in the first half of the season was in the lower part of the table, and Mainz and Freiburg have spent most of the season in the lower part of the table. This was considered a soft spot in their schedule.
So sure, but not 6-0. That's the question, right?
Right.
I mean, you don't expect Bayern to. You expect Bayern to win, but you don't expect them to win 6-0.
Right. So speaking of the title race, we have the fixtures in front of us now. There's one fixture before the big game between the two. Bayern Munich head to Freiburg next week, while Borussia Dortmund face Wolfsburg at home. In those games, do you think that they're going to still be level on points entering their big game?
This is the interesting thing, because Borussia Dortmund now have to play Wolfsburg, the team that 2 weeks ago Bayern Munich beat 6-0. So the question is, how good are Borussia Dortmund?
Right.
Because that's the way to match it up. You know, Wolfsburg, I think, have been overachieving this season under Bruno Labbadia. He's done a decent job with a good squad. But, I mean, I didn't expect them to be playing so well. Can Borussia Dortmund get 3 points and win 3-0 and sort of say, yeah, we're, you know, so what? Whatever Bayern can do, we can do half as well, kind of thing. That's not a problem. I think Bayern will beat Freiburg. I don't think that's a problem. That might be like a 2-0 or maybe even a 1-0, because Freiburg are a bit uncomfortable. But, you know, Freiburg, as much as, you know, as everybody knows, we like the club. We went there a lot of time for them. You know, it's just a gulf in class there. And you can put them in the same bracket in terms of quality as a side like Mainz, because it's just too far. There aren't enough players in that Freiburg team that are going to cause Bayern Munich problems. So I think Bayern win, that puts them on 63. The question is, can Borussia Dortmund beat Wolfsburg? And that's where I'm a bit hesitant. I think Borussia Dortmund might draw that game. And then you go into the Klassiker knowing that you have to win. Otherwise, it's pretty much all over.
Yeah, and there was a tweet from Stefan Busco. He pointed this out yesterday. Axel Witsel is injured. Lukas Piszczek is still injured. And Marco Reus is expecting a child on the weekend. Now, of course, with pregnancy, you never know. I mean, it could be 2 weeks before or 2 weeks after. I know that as my wife is pregnant. So, So we don't know, but they could be without three of their best players too. And then at that point, if you feel like you have to win the game, what's your approach? I mean, you don't know.
Mario Götze has also got a rib injury. You know, you never know how long that's
going to take. Yeah, that was the fourth one. I couldn't remember the fourth one.
And so you've got four absolutely key players. Lukas Piszczek, we talked about that so many times. He's a right back. He's basically the cornerstone of that defense now. Axel Witsel, that midfield doesn't almost really work without him. Marco Reus can't even say enough words about Captain Fantastic there at that club. And Mario Götze, I think, has had he's been reborn in a different way. He's playing much better, but because he's playing differently to how he played before. So if you're missing any or all of those players, it's going to be a really difficult situation.
So looking at the fixture list of these two teams with the rest of the way, there are three teams that they both play the rest of the way. One of them is Freiburg, as we mentioned. One of them is Dusseldorf, who took points off of both of them in the first half of the season. And then there's Werder Bremen, who, as we mentioned last week, is still unbeaten and won against Bayer Leverkusen over the weekend. So which one of those three teams do you think could be one of the big deciding factors in the rest of the way?
Werder Bremen's a good shout. Remember, don't forget they beat Dortmund in the cup as well. So yeah. I think there's something to be said about Werder Bremen. The timing of the fixtures is really interesting, you know, because after the Dortmund game, I think when Dortmund play Bayern, that is after the Klassiker, there's so much to be said about the impact or the knock-on effect of that game. You know, Dortmund follow up that game with a Mainz game. So that's a very winnable game, right? Bayern follow that up with a Fortuna game. Now, I'm saying if Bayern don't win the Klassiker and they go into the Dusseldorf game, there is potential room to fall up there, to slip up. Because we saw how devastating Dodi Lukubakio could be and was. So I think Fortuna, ironically, given, and maybe fittingly, given how unbelievable they've been under Friedhelm Funkel this season, will play a decisive role in the title race. And for Dortmund, they play Fortuna the second last game of the season. So there's something to be said about that.
True.
I mean, looking at the schedule now, you know, putting up those, it's really important that, you know, you mentioned those three teams that they both have to play. But I think what's kind of even more decisive is two other fixtures. Bayern finish at Leipzig and Frankfurt. So those two games are not easy games. Leipzig probably going to be pushing for a top four spot. And Frankfurt, who knows?
As well, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Who knows what they'll be pushing for?
Yeah.
Dortmund finish at Gladbach, but they have to play Schalke again. And Schalke, however terrible or nightmarish their season has been, that fixture takes on a whole nother feeling every single season, home and away. So it's going to be exciting, but it's really, really interesting to see. But I do think the Classico, the result of that game is going to have huge impacts for the rest of the running.
All right, so we know that we haven't done a segment from the stadium in a long time, and we've been really busy, and we know that some of you look forward to that every week, so we apologize. But you do have an opportunity to choose which team we spotlight during the international break. So we'll put out a poll later this week for you guys to decide which team you want to choose. We've already done Hertha Berlin. We've already done Werder Bremen. We've done both promoted teams, and we obviously did our podcast special in Freiburg. So it won't be one of those five teams, but we'll put out a poll over the next week, and next week we will break down that team, fan base, their current situation, and how they're constructed and how we see them going forward. So look for that this week. But right now, since it's the international break, Jonathan and I wanted to do a little fun little exercise, which was essentially, since Thomas Müller and Jerome Boateng and Mats Hummels are not in the team anymore, it might be a good time to figure out who are the best options for Germany right now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull up the squad for both of us. Some interesting additions to this team. I know you've been tooting the Maxi Eggestein for the Germany team for a while. So,
happy to see that.
So I think you've been driving the bandwagon. So I think you can be the hipster on that and say that you said that first. Some interesting returns. Jonathan Tah returns to the team, takes Mats Hummels' old number. Lucas Klostermann getting his first call-up after participating with the team in the Olympics takes Thomas Müller's old number, which has caused some tiny bit of outrage among... I don't know how big the outrage has been on Twitter, but there has been some.
Twitter is outraged, to be honest, just in a sentence.
So why don't we start with the goalkeeper, who is an... I think we actually might be in agreement on this, finally.
Finally, you've come around.
Yeah. We both think that Marc-Andre ter Stegen should be starting for Germany right now, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. But unfortunately, Joachim Löw, the only man who really, whose opinion matters in this instance, does not see it that way.
I think with German goalkeeping, it's always a really unique situation because you have so many good options. You know, it's like choosing between a Lamborghini and a Ferrari. It doesn't matter which one. You get to drive it and have fun, you know? But, I mean, Manuel Neuer, of course, had struggled in the Champions... Well, not didn't really struggle, but had a really bad mistake in the Champions League. And I think his time is now up. Before the World Cup, I said, actually, that his time is still present, not past. But now I think that time has passed.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, the Lamborghini-Ferrari comparison is an interesting one because, you know, yes, you can certainly say you're both going to have fun, but what makes more sense to drive, you know, in this instance? Yeah. And I think if you've spent all your life driving a Lamborghini and it's worked really well, but suddenly you're in a different situation, you need to drive a Ferrari because a Ferrari is actually the better car, then it makes sense to do that, you know, and this will be the end of my ridiculous car analogy. But
actually, to be fair, it was mine. So
that's true. But Ter Stegen, I don't know what you want to do. You know, I don't know how much more the young man can do. He's basically playing, and has been for the last couple of seasons, the best football of his career at one of the biggest clubs in the world, at a club bigger than Bayern Munich.
At a club that's still in the Champions League.
At a club that's still in the Champions League. At a club that possesses the greatest player of all time. And I think you've got to take stock at some point and say, yes, Manuel Neuer is your captain, but is he above reproach? Because is he above the point where you can say, he's not playing well, therefore I can't pick him anymore? Because what you're saying, if you're taking that stance, is everyone in this squad has got to perform well enough to be here, but not Manuel Neuer. And that doesn't seem right to me, especially if that player is your captain. You have to uphold these standards in your team, and you have to make sure that your players follow them. Marc-Andre ter Stegen, for me, should have been the number one going into the World Cup based on his form. And were you going to make him wait now until 2022 to have a chance of being Germany's number one? And I understand the captain issue, and I'm not disregarding or ignoring the change that Manuel Neuer made at the goalkeeping position in the world a few years ago. But we're talking about the present. And I think in the present situation, there can be no denying that Marc-Andre ter Stegen is the best goalkeeper for Germany going forward. And I think If you're going to start a new Germany and you want to preach that, and Löw has been very heavy on that, then you have to do that in every position.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense to me to move on from Thomas Müller and Jerome Boateng and Mats Hummels and then not also move on from Manuel Neuer. Yeah. Because I know that Manuel Neuer is the captain, but Joachim Löw has said many times, it doesn't really matter who his captain is, because there's so many leadership. I mean, he was, during his press conference on Tuesday today, he was saying that Leroy Sané has become a leader on this. It could be a leader on this team.
Yeah, I mean,
he was just saying that to build his confidence. But at the same time, I don't know if that's necessarily that far off.
Maybe it's not. I mean, this is a player he didn't pick for potentially not wanting, or because he didn't feel comfortable about the fact that he might not like not being a starter in Russia, right? So that's one of the reasons why apparently Sané wasn't taken. But so maybe that's a quick turnaround. Maybe his form at Manchester City has given him an opportunity to carry leadership qualities in to the team, or maybe he just wants to make the best player in the squad the captain. You know, that's also an option. But you're right. Why wouldn't he not put Neuer in the same bracket as Müller and Hummels and Boateng and say, you know what, if we're going to move forward in a new Germany as a new Germany, I want to thank you for all of the things that you've done for the team, which he should have done and he didn't, and move on from that chapter. Because Manuel Neuer was the best goalkeeper in the world in 2014, and he had that high, and those players were at the peak, and they've done so much for German football. But German football generally is also suffering from not being able to move on and move forward. It's still stuck in the past, or it hasn't got the ability to change up quickly enough and to adapt. And this is one of those decisions that I think Löw is going to potentially suffer from. I mean, Manuel Neuer is still an excellent goalkeeper. I'm not saying he isn't, but I think there are better options, and I think they deserve the chance to play.
All right, so let's, before we get into the rest of our discussions, why don't we pick our formation?
Okay,
because that'll determine a lot.
Yeah, for sure. I think right now, I used to always say that it had to be 4-2-3-1 because that was the way that Germany always played. But I'm really tempted to say that it should be 4-3-3.
Okay.
I mean, what do you think?
I think you might have an argument to do three at the back.
Oh, okay. What, 5-3-2?
Or 5-3-2, yeah. Or I was thinking more 3-5-2, especially with some of the players that you look into the squad.
Looking at the team.
I think for the purpose of this exercise, I think we'll both decide on a 4-3-3. So okay. who do you have as a back four?
Well, it's tricky, really, because I'm not the biggest Antonio Rudiger fan, and I can see already that, you know, Tah and Rudiger are going to be key instruments moving forward. Based on what Löw has said, I'm willing to give Rudiger another chance, but I just don't see him as very good. I think Niklas Süle is by far and away the best Germany defender now, so he starts in the middle, and I think it's probably going to be Tah or Ginter next to either one of them. I think Ginter's actually got more about him. He's come on a bit. Jonathan Tah, I like him. I think he's prone to a few errors, but I'd be willing to give him a go considering how hard he's worked and he's only 23. I mean, Ginter's always a good option in the squad. So, yeah, I'd start with Süle and Tah in the center.
It is interesting because Süle and Ginter have actually played a lot together.
That's another reason.
They played together at the U23 level, I believe. I know that they played together at the Olympics.
And another reason for that to work, you know, so you've got options there. As for wingbacks, tricky, really. It looks like if you're playing, this is the other reason to play a back five, and I think you make the valid point of bringing that up, because I think if you play that way, then you're going to have wingbacks, and then I think it's probably going to be Nico Schulz and Hausenberg, right? I mean, I don't see it being anything other than that, because Kimmich is in midfield, blah, blah, blah. Let's get onto that later. But there's also a possibility that Thilo Kehrer plays as the right back in that situation, and then maybe Nico Schulz moves across to the other side. I mean,
yeah. So one of my arguments, actually, I mean, we'll get to one of my arguments for a three-man defense was not just because there's good quality center backs.
Yeah.
I mean, Antonio Rudiger is still. I know that he's definitely prone to mistakes, and he can be overzealous. I know that, but if he's playing in a back three, it doesn't. It matters less because...
Well, potentially, you say
potentially.
That. But if the wingbacks are so far forward and your back three is exposed, then you need to have defenders that are also capable of playing effectively in the wingback situation, because you're going to have three centre-backs who are really spread. And that's where I'd be tempted to play Süle, Tah, and Ginter over Rudiger.
Yeah, I think Marcel Hustenberg is going to get a big run in this international break, and I think he should, because I think he is, as a defender, he is the best defensive left back that Germany has.
Yeah, and that's why I think I would start him at left back. And then, of course, you come to the issue. Even if you have a back five, I would still start him as a left back. But if, as you said, we're assuming that we're playing a back four here. So I would stick with Hasenberg. Some people called for Danny Da Costa to be in this squad. I think that's a fair enough shout. He's been pretty good for Frankfurt going forward. But I can't get away from the fact that Joshua Kimmich should really be the right back for me. He shouldn't be in midfield. Löw is persisting with him in midfield. He said that that's worked. I, you know, would like to know when that was, because yeah, I haven't
seen
it.
That was a really strange quote, because he said we're going to leave Joshua Kimmich as our holding midfielder because it's been proven before.
Yeah, we're like, what?
No, it's not.
Was that in a dream you had, or, you know, some training games? Because I've never seen it. I don't know what world you're looking at that from, to be honest with you, Yogi, but I never saw it, and I don't know. I don't understand it. You know, lots of people are talking about this on Twitter today. Why would you want him out wide? Was it because he's the best crosser of the ball? People said, well, there's no one up front to cross the ball to head it in. Yeah, fine. Crossing doesn't just mean airborne crosses. He's got 13 assists in the Bundesliga.
I'm sorry, but Dortmund have been playing with Marco Reus and Mario Götze
and Paco Alcacer, and they're all about 4'5". So I mean, it's not an issue.
And that hasn't stopped from Jadon Sancho from crossing the ball.
Yeah, and it hasn't stopped. Yeah, Jadon Sancho doesn't always cross the ball like Beckham. You know, he puts the ball in the most. Look at the goal against Hertha. That's on his foot. That's still a cross. Yeah. You know, so yeah, I don't understand why you would move Joshua Kimmich out of basically the position where he's one of the best in the world at. You know, I can't think of many other better right backs. The issue with him is his positioning. We all know this. It was on show in Russia. It's been on show in the Bundesliga, and it's been on show against better opposition. Even in the Liverpool game in the first leg in Anfield, there were times where he was caught out of spot. And, you know, that's where he got booked, because he was pulled back and they missed him as a result. But in the second leg. But I think there's room to improve. And surely your goal as a coach has to be to take your best player in that position, considered one of the best players in the world, and improve him in his weaknesses, rather than move him to another position and have him basically deliver a whole list of weaknesses that are much longer. When he's in midfield, remember the Netherlands game, he would run 10 metres and then pass it to the guy he was running towards. And he dallies. He's very hesitant on the ball in midfield. I know that comes, maybe it will change with, you know, playing the position more often, but I just don't understand where the need to play that is.
I know that there's an argument for there. I mean, the national team and club football they're separate. Joachim Löw is not the first one to try to put a player in a different position than the one that they play normally at the club level, but more often than not, it does not work. And for that reason that you mentioned, are you going to be playing right back for most of the year, and then 2 weeks or for a week every month, you're going to be playing a completely different position? That doesn't work.
And he never plays
there.
This
isn't FIFA.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't. He never plays there for Bayern. You know, this isn't Pep Guardiola.
He did earlier in the season, but that was only out of pure necessity.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to get to the point where Bayern Munich are also going to buy better players in that position because they value Joshua Kimmich's production at right back. So I just don't see it. Nico Schulz, yeah, good option. He's the other, I think he...
They have the other left back.
The other option at left back. Probably a little bit more experienced in the Bundesliga than Hasenberg, but does he offer you as much going back? No, I think defensively Hasenberg's probably the smarter option. I could totally see Danny Da Costa being in the team. I think the shout for him there is fine. But right now, if I'm playing a back four, I would go with... not even just looking at the squad that's selected, but really the best options there would be Hasenberg, Zule, Tah, Kimmich. And then the other player I would consider playing is Thilo Kehrer. I think he's got really great potential. He's only 22, and I think the issue is, where do you play him? Do you play him at right back? Do you play him at centre back? I don't know. It's difficult. He showed at Manchester United in the second leg in Paris that he has his moments of weaknesses. He does. He made a huge error. But I still think he's got great potential. And the fact that he's playing so often for Paris Saint-Germain at the top level is not to be, you know, missed. So maybe there's an option there. And I think he's going to feature more, obviously, in a back five, because he did play in that formation against Holland. So
And also played a lot there a lot as Schalke. And when he was coming up, he played a lot of right back. But once Tedesco took over, he was, we talked about it earlier in the season. His departure from Schalke was one of the reasons why they struggled defensively.
Yeah, absolutely. So he's another option. And maybe there's a temptation to start him at centre back because he plays there sometimes for Paris. So I don't know. But I think I would stick to Zule and Tah. And
for the purpose of a 4-3-3, I agree with most of it, except I do think that Löw also values this veteran quality, and Matthias Ginter has that. So I think because Süle and Ginter have such a good rapport,
I wouldn't mind it. I wouldn't mind it if they played. I totally agree.
So let's move to midfield now, because I think this is where things get interesting. And one of the reasons why I've advocated for a back five is because they don't really have a holding midfielder anymore. Sami Khedira has been phased out. Emre Can, yeah, but obviously he's not in the squad now.
But he should be. I mean, this is my main concern with Löw, you know. And also this sort of, you know, now he's not, he's had too many chances. Yeah, you seen where Emre Can has played for Germany? Like left back at times. He's just played in a Juventus team that beat Atletico Madrid and performed brilliantly in midfield. You're telling me that a Juventus player who is still in the Champions League and might win, well, likely will win a league title, isn't worth your time? That's where I struggle, because this midfield is, I'd say, sort of top heavy. There's not very many players who can really hold.
That's a good point, because you have Toni Kroos and you have Ilkay Gundogan. And then after that, I mean, Leon Goretzka has a reason to start, for sure.
Yeah.
Again, if it was a back five, he would have more of a reason to start. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if he necessarily should displace either of those players, but at the same time, both of them are kind of orchestrators.
Yeah, it's really difficult. I mean, this is where you almost wish you had more players on the field, because Germany's balance here is very, very fine. And I think it depends on the opposition, depending on who gets picked. But I think you have to have a midfield with Ilkay Gundogan.
Right.
No brainer. Box to box. Great playmaker. Spots a great pass from distance and in close range. So I think he's a definite. The question about Eggestein and his driving force, I think you could make a case, but I think he's just arrived, so I'm keen to see whether he can keep up with the pace. He's only 22 as well, so there's room to
I'm sure he'll get some time against Serbia in the friendly.
Absolutely.
But I would be very surprised if he played against the Netherlands. I
mean, if he absolutely bosses it against Serbia, who knows whether he'll keep him in that situation. This is where I would have Ilkay Gundogan and Emre Can, because I would basically ask Can to sit and just do the dirty work, which I think he's, not saying he's getting better at, but playing at Juventus in that team, I think I would prefer him in that role. You don't have, I mean, if Sebastian Rudi hadn't, you know, his development had nosedived, then he would be great for this situation.
Yeah, it's weird, because Sebastian Rudi was kind of the answer to this, was who would be able to sit in front of defense, because he was great with that.
Germany need a Javi Martinez in that sense, I mean, but not someone as slow. You know, that's kind of the issue, because that's why Khedira isn't going to be in the team anymore, because he's just too slow, and it was ruthlessly exposed in Russia. So the question is, who is capable of doing that job whilst remaining quick and able to move around? And I think Chan's still the guy to do that. Give him another chance. He shouldn't be out after, you know, 21 games. But I think if he's not, I mean, that's why I would have Gundogan and Can. And then the third spot is really difficult to decide, because it depends. Do you want someone like Eggestein? Sure. Now, I almost would lean on the fact that Toni Kroos is too similar to Gundogan, and Gundogan's the better player at the moment. So I wouldn't pick Toni Kroos, which is a little bit controversial.
Although on this list, he's apparently the vice captain.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. But maybe it's just because he plays for Real Madrid.
Maybe.
But looking at the other options in midfield, there's a case to be made that maybe Goretzka plays there. But I think you and I both know that he would be better suited in a 10 than in an 8.
Well, I mean, if he plays in a 3-man midfield, you could have it set up so he's more of a 10.
You could. Maybe you would have Can holding and Gundogan and Goretzka next to each other. Maybe that's the best way to do it in midfield. In the current, that's the way I would maybe lean towards it at the moment. In the current setup, you know, if we look at the Serbia game, I think Eggestein plays. If it is a 3 in midfield, then he plays Eggestein, Goretzka, and Gundogan. I'm pretty sure of that. And if it's not Goretzka, then it'll be Havertz.
Yeah, true.
Because there's another option there that you ask Havertz to push on. Gundogan is your deep-lying playmaker kind of thing.
Yeah, that's again, with this 4-3-3, that's what we have to think about is where I mean, Kai Havertz isn't a winger, obviously.
No, but the advantage of playing a 4-2-3-1 is that 10 could be a number of players in this team.
But right now, I think you're right in saying that I think Goretzka would be better in this team as a 10 right now than Kai Havertz would.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. He's certainly in great form.
I just cannot forget his... I mean, I know it was 2 years ago, but his... When he got the chance at the Confederations Cup, he was so good.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
And when he had got the chance earlier this season with Bayern Munich, he was also really good.
And it's worth remembering that Kai Havertz is only 19, and so any involvement that he has at this stage is going to be of benefit to him. So, yeah.
So we're settling on a midfield three of Gundogan, Can, who's not in the team.
Yep.
So essentially, this is probably the role that Kimmich would play, would be that role.
Yeah, and I imagine that Joshua Kimmich will play that role. That's a good point, yeah. So, Gundogan, Goretzka, and Kimmich, although for me, Can, because Kimmich is at right back.
Right, exactly. All right, so now let's go to the front three. I think this is actually maybe more cut and dry than I think other parts of the field. Timo Werner is definitely going to start. He probably would start in the middle.
Yeah, although I wouldn't play him in the middle because I think he's been way more effective on the left.
On the wing, yeah.
So I think there's temptation to play Timo Werner on the left, Marco Reus in the middle.
Okay.
And Serge Gnabry out wide. The only problem with that is that you don't play Leroy Sané if you do that. And I think he has to play Leroy Sané because he's in the form of his life.
Do you think he has to play Marco Reus?
No, but the other issue with this team is that there are no strikers in this team. And if they play 4-2-3-1 or they play 4-3-3, they have no one, I don't believe, other than maybe Marco Reus, that can play in that role. I do not think anybody else has the ability to play in the 10. Maybe plays Kai Havertz there and does some false nine stuff with, you know, like he did with Götze. But there is no one else in this team. I do not think Timo Werner's best position for Germany is in the middle. He's a great striker when he wants to be, but I think in recent performances and the way that Germany want to set up, he is most effective on the wing, cutting in. I mean, it was a terrible performance in Russia, and I don't wish to keep harping on about that, but he was one of the few bright points cutting in off the wing. In that game against Sweden, he made such a difference when they moved him out wide. So I think if you play Werner, then you play him out wide. And you've got to remember, his first goal of 2019 came against Schalke last week. So he hasn't exactly been, you know, in red-hot form. So bearing the form thing in mind, I don't think Werner plays. I think Sané plays left because he's been insane. So you have to play him. And I think Serge Gnabry has also been too good not to play.
True.
So you might play him on the right. And I think that would probably be the best decision. And I like Julian Brandt. Everybody who knows, who follows me, knows that I like Julian Brandt. I've got a lot of time for him, but I don't think he gets in above Sané at the moment based on form. But you could play him. And if you were going to play him, you'd play him on the left. And then that leaves only Marco Reus to play in the middle. Yeah. And I just don't see anyone else. Now, I personally would love to see Max Kruse in the middle because I think he's the best player in that role. I genuinely do. Marco Reus is not going to last forever.
Yeah, I mean, obviously with Max Kruse, there's the...
Yeah, but, you know...
The whole Nutella thing.
Yeah, I mean, Max Kruse has made some questionable decisions. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, I don't think it says very much about this Germany staff if they don't want to give him the support and give him the opportunity. Werder Bremen did. Werder Bremen gave him the trust and the confidence that he needed. He's now leading the team. He's a captain, which means he's, you know, arguably an exemplary member of that dressing room. I don't think there's another player in Germany that does what Max Kruse does better than Max Kruse, which means to me, he is the logical situation. He never will get picked again by Löw because Löw is obsessed with this new Germany and, you know, Max Kruse is turning 31 in 2 days or today or tomorrow. So it's never going to happen. But it's such a waste because Max Kruse possesses the exact skill that you need in this position, whether it's in a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3 or in a 3-5-2. I think even in a 3-5-2, he possesses what you need.
Yeah.
And we've seen it time and time and again at Bremen. So Lars Stindl, like him, in kind of similar in that situation. And I think if he'd not been injured, he would have gone to Russia. And
maybe they would. Oh, no, I think that's definitely true.
Maybe they would have then had a player who could have done that because I think Stindl is of a similar ilk.
It's a real shame that he got injured.
Yeah, it is.
That was his chance, I think.
It was because I don't think he or Peterson will ever play for Germany again. Marco certainly won't. And you've now got, because I think ultimately, ever since Kruse, Stindl and Oot have been attempts to replicate what Kruse did, and neither have worked that well. Stindl was looking very well at working, but then he got injured, and I still think he wasn't doing it as well as Max Kruse was. Niels Pettersson was kind of a he's in red hot form. Let's see what he can offer. I don't think that was ever as serious as it made out to be.
I would love to have run Robert Sealer.
Yeah, I would love to have seen him, you know, really excel, but, you know, never mind. The thing for me is, who plays? Who plays up top? And I think Sané is so solidly stuck on that left-hand side, and Gnabry is so solidly stuck on the right, that it's really between Werner and Royce. And I think right now, Werner doesn't justify it, and you have to play Royce. So yeah, I'd play those three.
I think, I think Löw still sticks with what he knows, which is one reason why Sané wasn't picked for the World Cup. And what he looks at that 2-1 result in the Nations League against France and how great that trio of Gnabry, Werner, and Sané were in that game. And I think against the Netherlands, he would try that again. Maybe Marco Reus would start in the friendly.
Yeah, I think there's an argument to be made that before Thomas Müller came on in the Netherlands game and he changed the shape and things, you know, altered up, that they were so good in with those front three. And there is a lot of reason to believe that Sané and Gnabry could bring the best out of Werner, because he's then going to have unbelievable support. If that works, then you can play Werner in the middle. But I'm still of the belief that Werner should really be playing on the left for Germany.
Yeah.
And then that leaves you only one option in the middle, and that's Marco Reus.
Yeah. So having this discussion, at least with the front three, it reminds me of something that Freddy Bobich said earlier this month, which is Germany don't have someone like Sebastian Haller in their youth setup.
How they would love to have someone like that.
Because even look at the U21s, it's not like they have better striking options there either.
No, it's the one position that I think going forward that Germany have some concerns. I mean, Kevin Folland is another name that's been performing reasonably well in the Bundesliga that could potentially argue that he should be in a team like that, because he's got great understanding with Havertz and Brandt, and there are another two players in the Germany setup. I don't see Folland as the same type of player as Kruse, who would drop deep and have this great touch and vision. I don't think Folland is that. I think Folland is kind of just a great poacher. He's just good at scoring. Which is kind of one-dimensional. The other player is Davy Zelka, but he can never stay fit long enough, and that's the other issue. He's also not, I don't know, he needs to put some form together to justify an inclusion. He can be very good on his days on, like on, but on his days off, he can be a little bit absent, so the form for a national team. But outside of those two, Folland and Zelka, I don't see anyone else that can necessarily jump in and deliver. Maybe Johannes Eggestein in time, but it's still a long way to go for Germany.
And Johannes Eggestein isn't even playing there for Werder Bremen right now.
Yeah, exactly.
He's playing out on the wing.
And that's why Max Kruse is the answer, ladies and gentlemen. But, you know, that time has unfortunately passed.
All right, that'll do it for this week's Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts. And if you do, please leave us a 5-star review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. Jonathan Harding is at JohnBlogs66, 2 G's and 2 6's, and I'm at Davis_VanOptor. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back sometime during the international break.